And we're back with more of this News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My next guest for the rest of the hour is singer, songwriter, and jazz great Al Jarreau. Jarreau is the first vocalist in music history to receive Grammy Awards in three separate categories: jazz, pop, and R&B. His first album was released back in 1965, and since then, he's recorded more than two dozen albums. It's like a favorite song that we love
to sing. Every time we hear the music, and we're in this love together, we got the kind that lasts forever.
It may surprise you to learn that Al Jarreau attended the University of Iowa's College of Education, where he earned a graduate degree in rehabilitation counseling. Al Jarreau is coming back to Iowa to visit for a couple of days next week. On Thursday, September 18th, he'll be part of the university's Distinguished Speakers Series. Then the next day on Friday evening, September 19th, he'll be headlining the Soul Fest with a free concert in downtown Iowa City. Al Jarreau joins me now by phone. What an incredible pleasure to speak with you, Al Jarreau.
Ben, I'm thrilled myself to get a chance to talk to you guys. The opportunities are few and far between. We got to keep on meeting like this. There's lots for us to be talking about, including being able to come back and sit with people from the Department of Education and continue this discussion about the importance of reading, writing, arithmetic.
Right. You are going to be sitting down with some students at the College of Education, from where you graduated. You graduated in the 1960s. Rehabilitation counseling was something
right.
that you wanted to go into. What is your message for students when you come back here?
Well, the message for students who've already come back there, they've kind of gotten, someone convinced them earlier on in their lives that there's something valuable about learning our place in the world as Americans, and that part of my message will be to pass that on to others, to encourage others. You got a younger brother, you got a church group that you meet with, tell the kids to get to school. And so I'll be saying, become part of local government. Mm-hmm. Go and meet and hang with City Hall and tell them to put the emphasis on the right syllable, education, We've kind of lost that emphasis, these days.
Mm-hmm. Al Jarreau, I'd like to have you take us back to your decision to come to Iowa. You were born in Milwaukee in 1940.
Right.
The fifth of six children. Tell us how you found your way to Iowa. Why Iowa City from Milwaukee?
Well, what happened was that I was graduating from Ripon College, small college in Wisconsin, sister school to Coe and Grinnell. And Herbie Hancock and I were in school at the same time. He was at Grinnell. I never met him till years later, and we're on the other side of the room shouting at each other, "Hey, Grinnell! Hey, Ripon!" I was at Ripon College, graduating in psychology, and I spent a summer doing an internship that was called the Jewish Center. I forgot the particulars of it. Anyhow, they were working with the disabled.
Mm-hmm.
I was very interested in that as a perhaps next step in my life, but I was also a very, very, very serious singer of music at that time, and with the dream in the back of my head. I was studying the dream and singing the dream, but I was in school and wanted to go on and get a graduate degree. Well, the opportunity came up to go ahead and do that when Dr. Moutard, who was head of the program, John Moutard, at the University of Iowa, said, he pointed a finger at me like Uncle Sam wants you, and said, "Come along with me, young man. We've got some good work for you to do as a rehabilitation counselor, and be a part of this helping profession and learn some things about life."
Right. You... you focused on rehabilitation counseling. This is helping people who have disabilities, I understand, right? So you studied, you got your degree from the University of Iowa, and then you went to work in this area as well in San Francisco?
Yes, I went to San Francisco and took my boards and worked for 3 years at the Division of Rehabilitation on Van Ness Avenue and McAllister, right diagonally from the City Hall, and worked for 3 years, and during that 3 years, I was, chasing the other brass ring, and that was to do music.
Right.
That's where I met George Duke. So yeah, worked with George Duke then, and right there in the Haight-Ashbury during the Cultural Revolution, when the kids were walking around barefoot, bare-chested, burn your bra and your draft card, too. And Mom and Dad, I'm watching what you do.
So before you got out to that scene in San Francisco, you were here, as we mentioned, at the University of Iowa. What do you remember most about Iowa City and the University of Iowa? What images come to your head, or what events or what happenings?
Well, for me, man, it kind of scared. I was shivering in my boots,
Right.
It was a university town with 28,000 to 30,000 students. That's a big city. There's a lot of activity going on. I mean, there's coming and going, including, horns honking and bells and sirens ringing. So for me, it was just really a cultural change, a bit scary, and going off to study this new work. And that is the thing that I remember largely about being in Iowa City.
Right.
So many students from all over the world. I had a roommate at this graduate housing unit who came over to study engineering, and he was from India. So newness of this metropolitan world that I was stepping into there as a young man, coming from Ripon College. We were 800 students at Ripon College.
And so this was a much bigger campus that you had to get used to.
We ate dinner dining room table style. We sat down to a dining room table, and they brought us plates of food and passed the milk and passed the mashed potatoes and sang a doxology before we before we ate. And we've grown to about 900 students now. So it was a big new world that I was stepping into, a bit scary, but I was doing music.
Right, and you were developing as a musician at this time. That's what I wanted to ask about. Next to your academic studies, were you playing in clubs or
playing in Cedar Rapids?
Do you happen to remember
at
where?
Tender Trap. At the Tender Trap, Joe Abadili was on championship wrestling team at the University of Iowa, but he was a brilliant drummer, and he opened this club in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, called the Tender Trap. If you haven't guessed by now, he loved Frank Sinatra, who sang this song, The Tender Trap. He opened The Tender Trap, and it was several years before I got there, but I went there and sang two nights a week with the Bill Bell Trio, then with a couple other piano guys who headed up trios there, and was continuing, to evolve as a young jazz singer. In fact, there's a record that some will call my first record that came from the Tender Trap with a piano player that I just ran into the other night as I was releasing my new album downtown at the Grammy Museum. And Cal Besmer was there looking at me and going, "I know you and you know me," and from Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Right.
Very important step for me that time there. And to come just a few months after me was David Sanborn. Very important little training grounds there, graduate degrees at the Tender Trap that we took. So, and I know what it smells like because of Quaker Oats and Cedar Rapids.
Well, we can take you up there because it still smells of Quaker Oats, and so you may even be able to guess what they're making that day.
Based Oh, amazing!
So you got in tune. You got to this new city, Iowa City, in the mid '60s, and you gravitated towards the groups that had to do with singing. It sounds like,
yeah.
And I understand your father was a minister. He was a singer. Your mother was a church pianist. So you had this foundation in soul music, gospel music, and you found that sort of music here in Iowa.
Well. You know, my dad was a minister and my mother was the church pianist, and so that kind of was the first performing situations for me and first real, you know, in-depth kind of musical experiences. I mean, so much in-depth that it was saturating for a young kid. I heard that much music. My older brothers and sisters were singing and playing music in my living room and brought the music of the 40s into my house. I was here in Basie and Ellington and Stan Kenton and Illinois Jacket and Oscar Peterson and Ella Fitzgerald and Billy Eckstein and Sarah Vaughan in my living room and was singing those songs. So between the church, where I sang in the choir every Sabbath day, Saturday Sabbath day, I refer to it, because we were Seventh-day Adventists, and we were not doing, you know, tambourine, drum, guitar, gospel music like they do today. It was very sedentary, quiet kind of music, closer to Nearer My God to Thee than shouting and shaking tambourines. But it was still very fulfilling music because I had the opportunity to stand there and sing and get my feet wet, kind of with learning what it's like to do something that people respond to with a smile and a hug to a little singer of 5-7 years of age and rouge on my lips and kisses on my cheeks. Hey, that can be very
that's
very
a motivator
alluring.
Yes. If you
so when I was at the University of Iowa, I had moved on from church music to being kind of this neophyte jazz singer, and that's what I was doing in Cedar Rapids at the Tender Trap.
Can you give me an example, going back to the mid-60s when you were at the University of Iowa, what sort of music, what sort of style would you have been singing at the Tender Trap in Cedar Rapids?
Well, I might have been singing, "Cigarette holder, the witch digs me over her shoulder, she digs me out catting that satin doll," and that will be on that record of called The Masquerade, where I sing a song called "The Masquerade Is Over," and it's a different song than the Benson big hit. Comes from the American Book of Standards, and there's a version of Duke Ellington's "Sophisticated Lady" that still gets played on jazz radio out here. I was a neophyte, but somebody thinks that that's a very valuable version of "Sophisticated Lady," and if on any night that you're out here, you might hear it on a local jazz station. So I was, definitely getting my feet wet and doing that kind of music. You could even refer to it as, you know, the kind of repertoire that you'd hear Tony Bennett sing. Yeah, I sang them all.
If you've just joined us, my guest is jazz great Al Jarreau. He's coming back to Iowa to visit his alma mater, the University of Iowa, which he attended in the mid-1960s. He'll be in Iowa City on Thursday, September 18th, and Friday evening, September 19th, headlining the Soul Fest with a free concert in downtown Iowa City in the evening. Now, you Al Jarreau are, of course, well known for your scat singing, the ability for to imitate all kinds of instruments with your voice. So, Al Jarreau, I want us to hear a little bit of a live performance you did of one of your well-known numbers that demonstrates this. Take five, and then ask you about it. Al Jarreau, how early did that playing with your voice start for you?
Oh my goodness, that started, in fact, during the San Francisco days, just minutes or so after I left the university there and the Tender Trap in Cedar Rapids. I had gone to California, and I started working with George Duke, and had fallen under the spell, as George had too, of Brazilian music. And so all of the Brazilian percussive stuff I was starting to imitate in my head, driving along in a car, and if I had my window down, people were looking at me in a strange way as I was going.
Oh, yeah, bravo, thank you.
Well, I started doing that stuff, and it evolved into this arrangement that I had of Take Five, which is, you know, a kind of, you know, I think for jazzers, one of the arrangements of Take Five that they really like. And for me, it's a mainstay in my performances every day.
So yeah. that voice work that you did, all the variations that you came up with, that was self-taught? Nobody showed you that? You were just experimenting?
Well, sure, people showed me that. Not singers. Drummers and percussionists.
I see.
And guitar players who played those Brazilian bossa rhythms that I was imitating, that I just was drawn to and started doing to in my car, you know, entertaining myself, first of all, and then thinking, I wonder if I could do this on stage with a mic and play a cabaça, that rhythm that goes, that instrument out from Brazil and Africa that's called cabaça or afuxé, and twist the gourd and get, and then put my foot on the mic stand and get the bass drum sound by going. And I did it. That became part of my thumbprint, Al Jarreau, still my signature, and maybe some of my living legacy and legacy in general.
Right.
But it began just moments after, you know, leaving Iowa City, as I was, you know, listening to the music of the time, and so that music just moved my soul, and it's still in the music that I do today. Those vocal percussive sounds, and that whole, you know, flow of emotions that comes out of a people who are so more mixed and diverse than we are culturally in America. And it's just, if you care to, it's a lesson.
Well, this is interesting. As we wrap up this conversation, Al Jarreau, that you talked about coming to the University of Iowa to focus on rehabilitation counseling, helping people who have disabilities, actually not making that your career. But you have to agree that what you have found in music and what you have given to people and the new styles of music that you have put out there, that music is a therapy, and Al Jarreau's music is one of the best therapies out there. Have you found that music is a therapy not only for you but for those who listen?
Well, I think I have found that, and I think more importantly than that, other people have found that, and it's been a therapy forever and ever and ever. And it does soothe us, and you should read my mail. I got people writing me and saying, Al, I love what you sang in that song, so-and-so. I got sick, you may not know, and I listened to that song, and it really helped me to, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
Yeah, before me, music has been a soothing, healing kind of activity. And so it's great for me to be part of God's healing in some small way.
You, Al Jarreau, are now in your 70s. What do you like to spend your time doing? Any new passions that you've recently discovered?
Well, no, it's all music. You know, I don't downhill ski or drive fast cars or anything. I sing music on stage in front of an audience. You know, I walk the high wire every night.
Al Jarreau, yeah. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time, and we are looking so forward to welcoming you back to Iowa next week. We appreciate your time, Al.
Well, thank you, Ben, and tell your audience I said hello, and it's nice to talk to them this way, and I hope we have to keep meeting like this.
All right. Once again, Al Jarreau is coming back to Iowa City to visit for a couple of days next week as a graduate of the University of Iowa. On Thursday, the 18th, he'll be part of the university's Distinguished Speakers Series. On Friday evening, September 19th, he'll be headlining the Soul Fest with a free concert in downtown Iowa City. Time to boogie on out of this program. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Stevens. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.